couple of other billionaires are dead because they wanted to go down and see the Titanic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, $250,000 for a trip down.
Yeah, but that's nothing to them. You know?
I know.
Five billionaires getting a submersible that they've been warned not to get in. I don't know. What do you make of that headline?
You know,
I guess the headline is five billionaires are dead.
A long time ago, I think it was, I don't know which one of the late night comedians, but they went on for months about this testimony that then Vice President Nelson Rockefeller had, you know, he was appointed to fill, I forget whose shoes. He wasn't actually on the ballot. He got appointed to be vice president or, yeah, he got, yeah, for a while. And I don't remember how that happened. But in any event, he had to go before a hearing. And they were asking him about some of the gifts that he had given various congressmen and senators over the years. And they, you know, pointed back then, you know, they highlighted the fact that, well, here was a Christmas gift of $15,000, you know, to so-and-so and 20 to another and 10,000 to this one, 50,000 to that one. And the, you know, the question is, us, you know, what'd you do? Well, I mean, I like to thank people, you know, for the good work that they're doing. And, well, that's a lot of money. It's a big thank you note to someone was telling him, you know. And he says, well, $10,000. It's just like a dime to me.
Well, and that is actually a very good point about what I was going to address about this. I think when you become a billionaire, I mean, I don't know this because I haven't experienced it firsthand, but I'm sure something changes within you psychologically. And, you know, your brain's wired a little differently when you have that much money, I would think. You know, you start to, your decision-making process becomes much different than most of us. And yes. I do think that there is some invincible trait about these people that really must be there, that they, because I did actually last night for the first time sit down and watch some news, and I watched a great interview. And if Carol's really interested in this, actually anybody who's interested in it should watch this interview with James Cameron.
You right, know, who did the Titanic movie. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But he's a professional deep sea. I mean, he knows more about the deep sea than anybody.
Oh, he's and, all right. Yeah.
And he was fascinating. The entire interview last night on Anderson Cooper, you should watch it. It was great. And it really shone light on and focus on how idiotic this journey was.
Yeah.
And yeah, that, you know, like I said, there just must be something in the way their brain works. There yeah. should be a warning when you become a billionaire that it's not
right.
good for your
health. You're right. Your
you
recklessness.
Might make poor decisions.
You're right. Your recklessness will not only kill you, but a whole bunch of other people too.
Exactly. Well, you know, it brought me to another revelation last night when I was, you know, thinking about the minds of these people and how this all played out. And it brought me to a story that I have not thought about in a long time. One of my very earliest childhood memories are from going to Disney World. We only went one time. My parents mm-hmm. only, I don't even think we had the money really to go. I just think there was a race. My dad is a gambler, and something was happening at Tampa Bay Downs. So he really, the goal was to get to Tampa Bay Downs.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
To make it a family trip, we had to go to Disney World on the way.
Yes, of course. Yeah, right.
So we went to Disney World. And they had a ride back then called 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Sure, after the movie, yeah.
Yeah, so it was this Jacques Cousteau, themed ride, and you basically got in this ride submarine, and every seat had a window, and then there were all these neon colored, underwater creatures. Well, then the ride stopped, and I specifically have this melted into my brain. For 3 hours, I was next to a neon pink octopus next to my window, like pretending to swim, like in this strange. And the ride got stuck. We were stuck underwater for 3 hours. And I just, it's forever imprinted, that octopus next to my window. But I could get close enough to the window as a little girl and look up, and I could see the rays of sunshine. Like I wasn't that far underwater.
Right, yeah.
But then,
Let's
oh
welcome Larry
yeah.
Bish
Hi,
to our little
Larry.
triangle here this
Hi.
morning.
Is my mic
It's
working?
working p fine. Yes,
Okay. Yeah.
you're there, man. You're there,
I
man. Anyway,
conquered some
well,
technological
were you? I
difficulties.
mean, h have you been following the undersea Titanic developments, Larry?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but you know what comes to my mind is 500 people drowned in the Mediterranean the day before, and they didn't make as much of a deal about that. But I wrote something down yesterday from a Stoic thing I was reading. It said, "You were talking about billionaires, and I'm the champion of not wanting any."
Yeah, Larry, my mind goes down those rabbit holes too, because even with the image of my plastic neon pink octopus at Disney World, where that led me was, isn't that funny? That was probably in 1975, and if that happened now, they'd have 100 lawsuits for post-traumatic stress disorder, and it ruined my life, and
Yeah,
I
see
just
that.
thought how different it would be if it happened today.
You see that the woman who discovered that her potato peel serving, like French fry or something, wasn't really potato peelings. It was
Oh
some
no.
chemical. Well, everybody knew it. Everybody always knew. She sued the restaurant for $5 million because potato peels were mislabeled.
Did she win?
Weird. Oh, it's still going.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I put
Well,
that up.
I don't know. I mean, you get into our legal system, whether anybody believes in it much anymore is a
Well, the problem we have is enough will never be enough as long as enough is too little. And that's where you get a billionaire. He's mentally ill. All of them. Every one of them's got something wrong with him, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, that's where I was going with that. It was just, they made a poor decision that seemed to be very well documented how unsafe this vehicle was. So.
Well, look about the billionaires that made the inappropriate decision to get to really be what was the word? Fascinated with Jeffrey Epstein's lifestyle.
Yeah.
They were drawn to
That was actually a really disturbing. I mean, as a woman in what 2019, whenever all that was happening, it was almost unbelievable that we have come, I say that with a smirk, we have come this far, and that this was still happening, and the little black book and the fame, rich and famous, and I'm just like, seriously? It's just really this.
You know what I think we're not good at? We're not good at correctly identifying and coming to terms with how little progress we've made in so many ways. And wealth is one, and power is another. When I look at what's going on, I see antiquity. And I've got this attitude, it isn't popular, what's football? It's a distraction. And I don't just like gladiators, it's no different that I see, except they don't fight to the death. I saw the Democrats on the floor protesting the censorship of Adam Schiff. Did you see that? All in a group, all yelling, not letting speaker say anything. Like that's going to change anything. It just looked to me like a bunch of juveniles. And I just, how can you have faith? It's a shit show. And then the premise of our economy is, let's say it's open to skepticism. What Churchill say?
Churchill? Oh my God.
But he said, well, everybody knows what he said about democracy
Not a very good
is
system, but better than
terrible.
all the rest.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, we're going to find out whether that's true. Although
Are you
I
sure?
have a hard time determining what is democracy. Like we have a system where, the fight against authoritarianism is really a fight to get rid of one of our two political parties. At least in its current state, maybe some other one might come up. But I mean, so then we would be technically a one-party state. Would that make us authoritarian? I don't know. What is it? Is it? Is it a matter? Is it the number of political parties you have?
John, you and I had this debate way back when at Shepherd University on our radio show, probably 10 years ago. And I remember saying, if we don't get rid of this duality of a two-party system, and you came back with, well, what do you want, Karen? Parliamentary system?
Oh, we were real secure in our system, weren't
There'll be no,
we?
there'll be no, what do you call it, direct election of the president anymore. We'll have the Central Committee elect him, or the parliament, whatever, and of course, then, it's like this question came up just recently with the United Auto Workers, okay, who I knew they were in trouble 30 years ago when I heard that they were going to pay their. I was talking to one of their lead negotiators who I'd actually thought was a pretty good guy. He was a good guy in some ways. But anyway, he was saying, I was asking, how much are you making? He said, I'm making about 450. I said, $450,000 in a labor union, and he says, "Well, we have to be able to sit across the table from our peers on the other side and have some self-respect." I said, "Man, that's not going to end well." And it didn't, right? Because they got nailed for corruption after, about 4 or 5 years ago, the group that was running, and they almost got put under receivership. So the cure for it was, now normally industrial unions elect delegates to a convention, and the convention elects the president or the executive board, whatever. Okay. Actually, executive board usually comes as our practically presidents of different districts of the union, and they're all elected in the same way. Nobody's really elected at large because the companies won't let you have at large elections in the shop, okay, ever for the union. So, so they, anyway, they said, well, you have to have a direct election of the president. And they did, but 10% of the members voted because you had to go out someplace and vote. 10%. And that's supposed to be more democratic than a delegated convention. And actually, it's kind of an invitation. It's also an invitation for any external force, especially the company, to find a third-party way to get directly involved in elections in the union. And they probably do that in some ways anyway now because, if you have a negotiating committees, I mean, the company's personnel guys work on the negotiating committee people all the time. Okay. I mean, always trying to establish common ground. And that's, you know, I don't fault them for that, as long as you don't, what's our old union president said, it's okay to be civil and shake hands, just don't start rubbing bellies.
You know, John, my mother, I grew up in Sharon, Pennsylvania, about 40 miles northwest of Pittsburgh. And every male in my family when I was a kid worked in steel mills or one of the Westinghouse. My grandfather worked in Westinghouse, but they worked in steel mills and they were on strikes when I was little. And they were on strike pretty often. They were joined with the truckers and the railroad. They were joined with a lot of people and had a lot of power. But what my point is, my mother, after a long time, they won a lot. They won a lot. And they won too much. I don't know what your reaction, John, will be, but they were ridiculous. They won. My mother put it this way. She said the unions, the companies exploit the workers to the point of starvation. And then the workers unionize and whip the companies into a corner so that they can't compete in business anymore. And, what I saw unfold over time was that a lot of steel companies just left the country, went somewhere else.
Right.
And then the ones that stayed, the union workers ended up making concessions.
Yes.
To keep their job and keep their
benefits.
Steel company in the country. They eased up on them because they had them beaten so far into the ground that they were threatening to leave. And so I don't know what I think of that, except that our economic system is deeply flawed. And that's probably always been there. It is again. You know? It slaves and slave owners.
Yeah.
Either, you know, I wonder how we'll ever get away from these ancient models of how to run a society. And I don't think most people look at it that way. Just like most people don't. I don't think most men sit down and really contemplate what we've done with women in our society. And we like to think that we're better than Muslims or people who wear burqas.
Yeah.
I don't see that. I don't see that all that, you know. Women are underpaid, they're abused, they don't have any power, they're not in Congress. Just because they're not walking 10 paces behind their husband doesn't mean they're not being exploited. They are. And I don't even think most women know that. You look closely and make these comparisons and they just don't hold up that we're so
Larry, I applaud you for even having male genitalia and going there. So thank you.
I'm really glad you feel that way, Karen.
Well, I witnessed something just last weekend? It was fascinating to me. Not in a good way.
Oh dear.
And So I was at Lake Norman, in North Carolina. And, this is a, friendship by marriage. It's my daughter who's getting married. It's her soon to be husband's family. And we were finalizing some wedding details. And it's always a fine time. They're wonderful people from Southern West Virginia. And they have a house at Lake Norman. Lake Norman is a huge man-made Duke Energy lake.
Uh-huh.
So when I arrived, you know, of course the whole thing was going out on the, you know, pontoon and, you know, spending $500 on fuel and, you know, like things that boggle my mind a little bit.
Hopefully there was alcohol. I'm sure there was alcohol involved. So
of course, yeah. Only the best, the finest. So there was somebody on the boat, one of the couples or one of the people on the boat And I'm always the outcast, but they love me. They love me for who I am. I'm very close to my daughter's future in-laws. And we just, you know, they go to the Greenbrier for dinner and, you know, I make a veggie wrap at home. So we just have different lifestyles.
Right.
So, but they are wonderful. So what, somebody on the boat had some friends who were docked on the lower end of the lake, you know, and they wanted to go down and say hi to them. So, you know, we wasted $100 in fuel to get down to that end of the lake. And so it was like, I guess it's the hangout where the Trump flags are all hanging out together. Oh, so that's wow. Where we entered into this oasis of parked wow. Yachts. I mean, everything from a yacht, a houseboat to, you know, just a, you know, little fishing boat or pontoon. But there were these $4 million houseboats docked all in a row.
Right.
And of course, that is the people that we were going to visit. So,
right.
You know, it immediately was like, huh? You know, come on. And there's scotch flying around or whatever the hell they were drinking. I was like, I can't, no. So I jumped in the lake. So I swam for an hour while they all boat hopped and hobnobbed and, you know, did their thing, which is fine. Cause I'm fine doing my own thing and living my life my way. So I was just in the water doing exercises and getting my workout.
Lake Norman.
Yeah. And the very last houseboat, so it's like four of them right in a row, there was a woman in a bikini, you know, standing there drinking a beer, and you know, their flags are flying. And another boat of men came by, and they were just hooting and hollering and just catcalling her, and yeah, this woman's like my age, you know, and they're just like all over it. And her husband or partner or whoever comes over, and he was like, yeah, she's mine, ain't she great? Oh my God, look at her.
Oh God.
And I'm like, okay, do I really want to live anymore? Maybe I just go under now.
Yep. Oh man.
Absolute. I like disgust. There are kids. There's and
oh,
I
their
just
kids
like,
are all
no,
around. They had
no,
their kids were all around too. Oh wow, yeah, sure.
Kids, dogs, the whole family, you know.
Yeah. Right. Wow.
I love. Yeah, cat calls are accepted. You know. You're allowed to hoot at a stranger.
But know? it was that pride thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was just like, yeah, it was that kind of like rally of ownership of like, whoa. And I just was so freaking disgusted.
Right.
Have you guys figured it out? I mean, this divide seems between people who read, stay informed, have an education, are brought up a certain way, and these other people, because I am not comfortable feeling I am just as right as you are wrong. I'm not comfortable with that. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
But, I don't see this ending well.
I know. I don't either.
I think that, you know, these groups are affiliated now. They weren't before. Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and then a dozen lesser known right-wing activist militant groups. And then you add in Christians who...
Christian
for
nationalists.
All your talk, yeah, for all your talk, you know, about following Jesus, pretty violent group, you know.
kill them all.
Gun, killing you. And there we are again, back in antiquity.
You know, Carol and I were watching a history of the Mongol Empire And it's an interesting feature about gender roles in the Mongol Empire versus the more sedentary, agricultural-based Chinese dynasties that had preceded it. And one, of course, the Mongol Empire was based on, it was united by Genghis Khan basically as on a military basis, that you get a big lot of soldiers and you pay them by expanding and going and ripping off everybody. That's how you pay them. And of course, to keep everybody together, if they have peace, you can come back home, they all start bloodletting each other, you know, the different clans and everything. So you keep them busy going out, you know, and keep conquering more and more and more and more. Well, the fact that they had to go send the soldiers out all over the place with this, and they mastered an unbelievable kind of armed force with both cavalry and the use of bows, a thing called a composite bow, on horseback. And they were unbeatable. They lost one campaign in 50 years. They beat everybody. But guess what happened to the women? There was nobody to run the government anymore when all the soldiers were headed out. So the women ran the government for almost the entire Mongol period. Genghis Khan he went on 15 different military campaigns and was killed in battle in the last one that he was in. And same thing happened to his grandson Kublai Khan, you know. As a consequence, the role of women in Mongol society is very different than Chinese society, you know, historically. There was only one Chinese female emperor in the whole 10,000 years, okay? And that was an unusual circumstance where it happened. Although Disney made a movie about her, Mulan. You know? But anyway, so... it's interesting how your society comes together as to how the different roles were, you know, and I don't know what that means about us, but you're free to be an anarchist. Everybody, go ahead, do your own thing. What everybody else thinks doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know that? Have you heard of? I'm sure you do. The Tassadae. The hunter-gatherer group they found in Philippines that had never been contacted, I don't know, 30 years ago, some 40. Oh boy. they had a matriarch. They had no government except a matriarch. And I think there are other examples of women in charge, or a woman in charge. I'm sure there are the queen of Egypt or the queen of England, you know, people say that. And there may be something to it, but it didn't change the lives of women in general. And should have.
Well, just even the Native Americans, how...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How we honored, or, you know, they honored women and you know, Mother Earth, and then look what happened when we westernized them.
Yeah.
And now they're doing everything they can right to obliterate that history. Mm-hmm. They don't want us to face the music. They don't want to admit that our ancestors were amoral in any way.
Ban that book. Were. Now you just ban that book. We can't have that book, okay? You know.
I think it's funny. A couple people have said, well, let's see, and started quoting the Bible. I think maybe we ought to ban that too.
I saw a great
violent. It's got all the things you don't like.
Yeah. Yeah, right. The Bible, right? I saw a great Wanda Sykes. I think she's a comedian. She had this line.
Yeah,
you see her
great
thing? You know, she said, "Well, until a drag queen beats somebody over the head to death with a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird, I think you guys are barking up the wrong tree."
I always have to wonder. I wonder heavily, deeply, what's all this shit about homosexuality?
Can we make a bumper sticker?
What the hell does anybody care who's sleeping with who?
Oh, man.
How's that important to anybody? I don't understand.
It's the like only I said, answer. Larry, but like about the pronouns. When is the last time a pronoun ruined your day?
Yeah.
Oh, like, you know,
or even made you angry,
right?
Or insulted you in any way,
right?
Let alone be some kind of threat to your children. You know, I see that as just another distraction. Media's in there. Oh yeah, I gotta do something about these queers, you know.
Well, then there's what about the people who want to be, you know, non-binary? I mean, we have Carolyn, what was a family friend of ours at a quick meeting that their daughter is big into this, and you know, she objects very strenuously if you refer to them as her. Okay, whatever. Yeah, she gets upset. Well,
lost in the pronoun issue. Can't say they, them, he, her.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm ready to call anybody whatever they want to be called. Okay, really. But I don't see what you're going to do. Now, I noticed on the census form this year that when it gets to race, nationality, you have, I think, 10 choices. And there was a blank space for other, too. And then, I forget whether the gender thing was, had a new designation either. I'm not quite sure. I don't remember, but I assume that's coming. Okay. Anyway, I just don't see how you, you know, Tom Paine had a simple solution to all this, and that was just to refer to everybody as citizen. You know, and the communists said, get rid of all of it and just call everybody comrade. You know, which were.
Yeah.
You could come up with some gender.
Comrade, you know.
Well, or citizen, you know. That it was very popular during the French Revolution. That's how people did start to address. Remember, it became an embarrassment to refer to all the honorifics for, you know, nobility and clergy, right. All this other stuff, you know, so.
Yeah, I think the French Revolution gives you a nice, I don't know a whole lot about it, but it gives you a good example of how you can handle this problem we have of elites.
The guillotine?
Generation after generation. they're so deluded, they look like the Trump brothers. And then, I don't know.
The French, yeah. Well, you know, there's all these issues. Anyway, yeah. What's that?
Maybe
we're having
maybe AI will save us.
Yeah. Well, depends on who owns it, I presume. You know, but
like everything else,
it takes a tremendous.
AI
works best with the largest amount of data. So you got to have, maybe you don't have to own, but you got to possess or have access to, you know, really very large data resources to, you know, to make it work. I don't know how you solve that. I mean, right now you got, Facebook has 4.5 billion accounts. Google and YouTube have comparable.
The technology you use every day advances beyond your comfort. Yeah. Now you have to retrain, relearn, learn more, jump through more hoops to get to my bank account. I just see it clogging up. Advertisements everywhere popping up, you know.
It's not good.
I don't like where the world's going. I'm glad I'm old.
No, I hear you, Larry. It's been this past week. I've been dealing with a very large medical system in Maryland, Johns Hopkins, on behalf of my mother. And I just, it pains me. It hurts my soul to think of all of the people out there that just say, F it, I'm not even gonna get help. My mother would not be able to navigate this without me. And I think I've lost 10 years of my life in the past week just me having to navigate it.
Right.
So it has become really, I mean, impersonal is just the start. It's impossible. It's a full-time job, and it makes you feel just completely owned, and that, you know, to get authentic assistance is a really tough thing in this day and age. And I mean, it was a tough week. And I just, you know, I found myself at night meditating and saying prayers for the population who can't navigate this. My mother doesn't own a computer. She's never had a checking account, you know? My dad doesn't have a computer. They struggle all the time with trying to just get through the day with, you know, what they have to take care of. And
I'm sure tough. That's one area in which AI is going to make progress, actually, because, you know, the computer has or the companies that are using computers for all their record keeping and, you know, everything and process management. I mean, they have they're a hostage right to the software. And to a certain extent, you know, the clients, the customers, the users, the members or whatever it is, the citizens, they need, you know, almost a similar amount of automation that that's there on the server side to help them navigate. So I bet you're going to see these bots like Alexa and Siri and all these other things. They're going to get better at logging you in. Would you like to get a reservation to go to Hawaii next week? Okay. And you're going to see those kinds of things who are programmed. All you got, you enter all your information in the beginning, right? You know, plus of course, then whoever owns the bot possesses your information. But nonetheless, right? That, you know, like how else can people be served? Because even people that have some technical ability or they use devices all the time, right? They're not like your mom or dad, Karen. But nonetheless, even, you know, I mean, I had a problem making my train reservation via the new Amtrak system this morning going to New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, this wasn't like the one I used before. And of course, they want to find who you are. I identification. How do I identify somebody? How do I know that you are who you say you are? Is a huge issue. And you know, in the end, it's going to be the government. When you're going to find out that your internet
ID. And this
ID,
is where I keep all my information that I've written down all week.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
An old-fashioned composition book.
That's right. You know.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's not me, man. I put all my information on Post-its on my computer, you know, so I have 55 passwords here.
You know, I have a stepson-in-law who that when he was very young, man, he's not old now, he's 32. He never went to college, but he got the idea, and he told me. I asked him what he does. He has a company. I said, what is it? And he said he goes into a business and he looks around, and if he sees what you're describing, John, he offers to fix that. And he's good at it. And he can take all the Post-its off your screen and put all in. He's good at organizing data. You know? And he is doing real well that way. Saying that, I can say, I don't like billionaires. I don't really like multimillionaires. But I understand completely that there are a lot of people who do what they love and are excellent at it, and the money just rolls in because that's how it is. That's how it works.
Right.
They're not stingy with it. They realize they owe something to somebody. Or, you know, Keanu Reeves, example of that.
Sure.
And you never hear about that actor. You never hear much about him. He donates most of his money to various charities.
Yeah.
You know, they being rich can just happen to you like the flu, you know.
Right.
just comes with what it's one of the.
I didn't catch that flu.
yeah, flu. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you know, when I got Bill Gates, is the thing, when we got hired, when Microsoft bought the last startup I worked for, which was an Israeli startup who located itself in the United States so that they could get defense contracts for software, secure software stuff. Anyway, so I went to work for Microsoft, and we got a visit from a Microsoft VP at our little startup. You know, must have had 35 employees in the U.S. and maybe another 35 in Israel. And so the VP from Microsoft comes in, and he introduces us to being part of Microsoft. And Microsoft, of course, is like the Borg, right? I mean, when they absorb a company, and that company's identity, previous identity, is effaced. Everybody becomes a Microsoft thing. Okay, it's not like AOL or some of these other companies. But anyway, so so one of our sales engineers, you know, who was, you know, asked this VP, he says, well, you know, like, you know, we've been meeting here every Friday, the CEO and the programmers and the sales guys and, you know, and the technicians, and tell us what the company's going to do and all that. And everybody goes out the next week and works hard. And what's it going to be like at Microsoft? And the VP says, well, I'm glad you asked that question. The best way to answer that is to tell you about my best friend, who designed Microsoft's database that was going to, in the old days, was going to compete with Access. It's the only thing it had before. Anyway, and he says he gave his proposal to his boss, and who was at, you know, layer 10 of a 15-layer organization, okay? And his boss said, that's brilliant. That's just brilliant. Why don't you, I tell you what, why don't you just add a little layer on top, okay, that makes it look like you're not attacking some other department, you know, because everybody's going to be real nervous about new ideas and what impact that might have on the headcount in their department, okay? So a little political thing on top of it, right? And it went up. So this thing heads up this 11-layer pancake, okay? And it finally gets to Steve Ballmer, number two, right under Bill, okay? At Microsoft, by the way, you never refer to Bill Gates. There's only one Bill in the whole company, okay? And Ballmer does the same thing that every other layer did to his proposal, which is you need to add another layer on here about the strategic thing, about the market and all that, or, you know, Gates is not going to pay attention to it. And he does that, you know. 6 months later, finally gets a meeting with Bill, okay? And he goes in, he's nervous as hell. He starts his little presentation, and Bill says, forget about that. Tell me about this part at the end, which was the original proposal. Okay. And the guy says, well, you were probably told that if you didn't put all this other stuff in here, you'd never get a chance to talk to me. And I said, yeah, that's what I was told. And that's what I believed. And Bill says, so what? Go out and start your own fucking company. I did. Then he gave him the job and put all that money behind his idea, okay? But that was his message. So the point is, this VP is telling this little sales engineer, what's it going to be like at Microsoft? And this is the story he tells about Bill Gates.
Start your own company.
You're not going to like Microsoft. That was what the message was.
I think at least it's... These models are Karen's example of her mom's experience of health crisis. You know, I got throat cancer in 1918. Took 6 weeks off work as a counselor at the jail, and it's a lot to go through. They were going to pull my teeth. I had to get radiation and chemo and a food tube, feeding tube, and a port. A lot of chemo, but they cured that cancer. And then it showed up again in my abdomen year later, and pinched off. The way I knew it was there, it was pinched off. Well, actually, no, my oncologist saw it, and then it pinched off the bile duct from my liver, and they couldn't operate because it was surrounded by arteries. So, what they did was, I was supposed to get a heart valve because I had a damn heart issue during all right at, before this. Anyway, they were going to fix that. Anyway, what happened is they had to put a stent in the bile duct. Then they cured the cancer, and it was a lymph node, and it went away. And then they had to remove the stent before they could put the valve in my heart.
Maybe so, they were reusing the same.
Yeah, they couldn't get in each other's way. It was one thing at a time. Anyway, my point is, I'll start it this way. At the first cancer, I went to my oncologist at the VA, and that's going to be my point. And he had his back to me on his computer. And I said to him, Dr. Bird, I just got a bill for $28,000, $20,000. I can't deal with this. He said, he didn't turn around. He said, throw it away. And that's what I've been doing now for years, is throwing away bills like that. And the question that keeps coming to me when I hear stories like yours with my wife, why didn't everybody have this? I was in the hospital several times. I never paid more than $50. Maybe I did, but not any, never $1,000. And I don't understand how other countries can, why don't we use that model? Why aren't people on the street saying, hey, Denmark has free health care. England has free health care. What the hell? Why do I have to go through this? They're not doing it. They don't get mad. I get mad, and I'm not even dealing with it. You know,
there's a lot of
we could do a whole show on that. And I've been there with medical bills, and yeah. I've had times that I've had decent health care, and actually I was a single mom. My kids were 1, 3, and 4 when I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And it was West Virginia Medicaid that got me through, and I got excellent care at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center because you were able to go across state lines at that point. So all of my care was in Pittsburgh. And since then, you know, for all of my follow-up care, I'm like 2 years behind and going to the doctor because I can't afford it. You know, it's hard. It's really, really hard. And I'm pretty much uninsurable at this point. So I hear what you're saying. I God love Bernie for fighting the good fight on that one. But people don't get it. People that haven't been through it don't get it.
Maybe who's the wild hair, gap tooth, black teachers is joining them, is jumping into the race, but he's crazy, like.
His name escapes me. I love him.
Yeah.
Cornell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cornell West.
Cornell West. You watch him talk, and you see. If you listen to what he's saying, it makes perfect sense.
I know.
And I just can't. I can't get over that. People want a cowboy in there, you know.
I know it's a tough one. On that note, I have to sign off. I've got to pick up my car.
It's time for us to go.
But I always, always, always love talking to you guys. And we should definitely talk more about healthcare. Maybe we can actually get somebody to come on who, maybe from the Working Families Party or something. They do a pretty good.
Well, the other thing on healthcare, it's worth getting a, there's some doctors that, for example, Dr. Baltieri, who runs pretty much the care centers in our area, you know, for the West Virginia University's system. I mean, he's a big advocate, for example, of Medicare for All. And he's on the front line, you know, in a way of what is the load of care that the existing number of, and availability of doctors is actually dealing with. Okay, because I think he's the managing. He's the one that hires him and assigns him right now. Anyway, so I'd like to get somebody.
Well, we should work on that topic, John. Maybe we can.
Let's work on that. Get somebody, because the only problem I got with having very left wing things on, it's true. I'm sure, and Baltieri would tell you all the time, is that it takes more socialism to get anything fixed in medical care. I mean, mm-hmm. whatever you do, it's going to be the state taking responsibility for either some end or paying for it or negotiating. And of course, then you in the background, you have the pharmaceuticals, which are very, very powerful. I mean, most medical care is pharmaceutical delivery in this country. Okay, so that could be a whole philosophical thing in itself, I'm sure. But nonetheless, you're talking about more socialism and probably having to exert some controls over the pharmaceutical industry, who, for example, the federal government paid for almost all the research on Moderna and Pfizer, almost all of it. Okay. And still the government gets charged $400 per prescription for that stuff and eats it for the public. Okay. And the whole mm-hmm. thing.
I know the general public doesn't realize all of this, and the general public doesn't realize that the VA system is a socialized medicine system. It's the biggest one we've got.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I have direct experience with the VA. I took care of somebody in hospice who was a patient at the VA, and it was a fabulous experience. And you know, people need to kind of open their eyes to that's socialism.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a little more. Well, let's call it more socialism. I mean, I don't want to get rid of all the. I don't want to nationalize the shoe shine shops. I really don't. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
with you on that.
I know you want to nationalize Google. I would like to put a public representative on their board of directors. You know, if you're mm-hmm. so big that you can't fail, if you fail, the whole economy gets shit canned. I think there should be somebody on top that's checking what the risk level we're engaging in is. You know,
right.
But, anyway, but anyway. All right, guys.
Have
thank
a
you.
Wonderful day, everybody.
Take care. It's late, but everything comes next. Thanks, Larry. All right. Take care,
sure.
buddy. All right.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye.